This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A 13-year-old girl told the adult on the other end of her text thread that neither of them could take care of a baby. "It's for the best, no," she wrote. The direction of the exchange is actually kind of backwards. The child was reassuring the adult. The reply that came back to her ended with a laugh. "You're SM stronger than me, baby. LMAO. So Celeste is texting David at 13 about being pregnant and saying that we can't take care of the baby. And his response is, "You're so much stronger than me, baby. Laugh my ass off." These two people have been so catastrophically failed by their parents, both of them. And it's not an excuse, but it is part of the recipe. It's literally stunning that you have, he's at this time, what, 17, 18 around there when this is going down. And she's there, and it's as if these people were just thrown out. I mean, David had family. I mean, they both had family to a certain extent. One was an immigrant family that looks like didn't have a lot of time to be parenting. That's not an excuse for absolute shit parenting, in my opinion, but it is what it is. And the other seemed to, well, looks like we got a cash cow on our hands, in my opinion. And let him do what he wants. Don't rattle the machine that's cranking out cash. Despite him going down disturbingly dark roads. "You're so much stronger than me, baby. Laugh my ass off. So much stronger." That's so much stronger, sent with a laugh attached for the grown man in the conversation to the child carrying the weight of it, carrying the child, carrying the grown man's baby. Then he wanted a date. When we gonna get it done? W-E-N, when you, no, when you, W-E-N, you gonna get it done. Glad we can use full words here when we're talking about such a serious topic as the life of a human being. And you're just like, "And we go, like, please, can we just take him away and execute him?" But this, I mean, this is a blob of flesh that doesn't need to take our air in any longer. He's really stealing too much oxygen from the rest of us. Her answer was two words, 2 days. And then one more question, because he told her his mother had once given him advice about what to ask if he was ever in this situation. "Honey, make sure you ask this question if you're ever in this situation." That's a fun, how did that, was that like on pizza night? Taco night? Ooh, it's taco night. "Hey, honey, if a 13-year-old ever says she's pregnant with your baby, make sure you say, is it mine?" His mother's advice to ask, "Is it mine, right? ? Ooh, we got the Chi-Chi's extra spicy salsa today for taco night. That's great. I'll take that advice, Ma. Can we listen to more Christian rock?" "Of course we can, son." DVD was brought, I'll just call him DVD. He was brought up in an extremely religious household, which seemed to be very strict until he started bringing in money, you know, singing about murdering people. And it was suddenly like, whoa, God. He'd be down with that chisel, right? "Is it mine, right?" Motherly advice, quoted to Oh, Jesus Christ. Cronin to a 13-year-old in the heaviest conversation of her short life. The advice wasn't to help her. The advice wasn't to tell somebody. The advice was a question about him, about what he was on the hook for. And the answer came back in 5 words. Of course it's yours, David. Those texts are from January 24 and July 24th, 26, a homicide detective read them out loud in the Los Angeles courtroom because the girl who wrote them is dead. And the man she wrote them to is charged with killing her. Detective was Corey Farrell, a nearly 30-year veteran of the LAPD and the final witness for the prosecution at the preliminary hearing of David Anthony Burke, the 21-year-old singer known as David. Judge Charlene Olmedo is deciding whether Burke stands trial for murder in the death of Celeste Rivas Hernandez. She was 14 when she died. Her body was found on September 8th of 2025 in the front trunk of Burke's Tesla. And even that discovery was dumb luck in paperwork. The car sat abandoned in a Hollywood Hills street for more than a month, according to neighbors, until somebody reported it and a tow yard hauled it in. Nobody cracked the case. A parking complaint actually cracked the case. That's how hard the system was looking for Celeste Rivas Hernandez, meaning it wasn't while she was missing. It's a detail that follows everybody in the story who claims they did their job. Burke has pled not guilty to murder, a charge involving a child under 14, and unlawful mutilation of human remains. He denies the allegations. A preliminary hearing asks only whether there's probable cause, which is one of the lowest bars in the legal system, and prosecutors could have cleared it quickly. Instead, they spent session after session after session moving this case out of sealed filings and into open court, and they saved the text for the end. On July 24th, Burke's defense team, a room full of reporters, and Celeste's own parents listened while the messages of a dead 13-year-old were read into the record. The prosecution built its final day around her words. It's not hard to see why. Physical evidence gets argued over. Chain of custody gets attacked. A text thread pulled off the defendant's own devices, timestamped in their own words, is the hardest kind of evidence to fight. Prosecutors closed on it on purpose. Because the January exchange didn't come from nowhere. And the thread didn't start in January. Farrell walked the court through all of it. The first messages between Burke and Celeste trace back to August of 2022. She was 11. Farrell testified that the messages show the relationship changed in November of 23, 2 months after her 13th birthday. 2 months after that, the text turned to a baby neither of them could care for. And a procedure scheduled 2 days out. That arithmetic sat in open court by the end of the session, and no cross-examination touches it. 11 when the messages started. 13 when the thread changed. 13 when she wrote, "It's for the best." Those aren't details from a tabloid or a comment thread. Those dates and words are pulled off devices and read to a judge under oath by a cop with 30 years on the job. The dates come straight from the record, and the record came off his own devices. There's no witness to impeach and no memory to shake. The timeline wrote itself message by message for almost 3 years. The thread runs all the way, April 23rd, 25, and then it stops. The date is the last one in the conversation, and it matters more than any other date in the case. Farrell put more than the text on the record. He described nearly 50 images recovered from Burke's phone and iCloud account. Material investigators say is illegal and involves a minor. The photographs were never shown to the public. A detective described them one at a time out loud into the record. Celeste's parents had stepped out earlier in the session while the autopsy testimony ran. They came back for that part. They chose to be in the room while a stranger described what was found on the devices of the man charged with killing their daughter. As Farrell went image by image, her mother began crying. Her father looked at the floor. The Associated Press reported both details from inside the courtroom. The facts of this case get recited in filings and news copy like they weigh nothing. In that room, they weighed everything, and two parents carried it. If only they had really given this level of shit while she was alive. I mean, well, they did, didn't they? Well, I don't know. I mean, the actions versus words in this case, from what we can see, in my opinion, are dramatically different. Dramatically different. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was failed spectacularly by her own parents, in my opinion. Yes, looking at this now, and you're seeing the failures in your own ways that allowed your daughter to fall into such a horrific trap that eventually took her own life? Should you carry some of that blame and some of that pain that goes along with spectacularly failing your daughter? Yes, every fucking bit of it. Because had there been something done differently, had there been, I don't know what, I wasn't in your house. But I'll tell you what, being A-okay with your 13-year-old going and having a boyfriend who's an adult, that's a failure as a parent. Well, they weren't. She ran away. She did this. She did. Yeah, you know, it ain't easy. It ain't easy being a parent by any stretch of the imagination. But it's your fucking job. So spare me the excuses. Spare me the bullshit. There's always things you can look back on as a parent and go, I could have done better. You could have done spectacularly better. You barely even came into the room as a parent. Well, they're immigrants. Well, they're this. Well, they had that going. Well, the only thing that you need to worry about more than anything else, or the thing you should be worrying about more than anything else, let me phrase it that way. Not the only thing. There's plenty of things you need to worry about as a parent, like keeping a roof over your head and people fed. There's more to life than that. You need to be there for that person. And if you're not, if they're left to wander the streets with their thugs, they'll be waiting for them until they get home. They'll be waiting, in the words of Tupac's, you can run the streets with your thugs. I'll be waiting for you until you get home. I'll be waiting. And Celeste Rivas Hernandez basically became the woman in that very song. Except she wasn't a woman. She was a child. And mom and dad seemed to be like, yeah. Again, my opinion, my conjecture. I'm sorry for your loss. Don't fail the rest of the children that are relying on you. The timeline sits badly next to the machine that surrounded this man. Burke wasn't an anonymous adult operating in the dark. He was a signed artist who's financed his own financial manager valued in earlier testimony at more than $10 million in earnings before his debut album. An entire industry apparatus existed to know everything about him that affected his value. His streams were tracked. His contracts were tracked. His release calendar was tracked. If a stream count twitched anywhere in his business, a grown professional noticed the same day. A 13-year-old in his text thread writing about a baby wasn't on anyone's dashboard, apparently. 3 years of messages, and it went undetected, not by his label, not by his management, not by anyone in a position to step in. Or was it, and ignored because, well, he's making $10 million. We better not mess with that machine. Going undetected isn't a passive thing at that level of fame. It takes every adult in the structure deciding that whatever a valuable young artist did on his phone wasn't their department. Somebody booked his travel. Somebody managed his image. Nobody asked the obvious question, or somebody did ask and decided the answer wasn't worth their paycheck. Neither version of that story is good, and when investigators finally started asking questions, the people closest to him didn't exactly run towards the truth. Prosecutors convened grand juries and subpoenaed his inner circle. His mother, his father, his brother fought those subpoenas from Texas, according to court records, and a judge ordered them to comply. The same mother whose advice he quoted to Celeste that January in that exchange had to be ordered by a court to answer questions under oath. You know, the advice of, if anybody asks, is it, ask him if it's yours. That's how voluntarily the truth has moved in this case, which is to say, it hasn't. And the five words Celeste answered that she answered with weren't the last time that name appeared in the evidence. A photograph shown in court on July 24th captured her hand on one finger in red ink, a small tattoo, David. Then her body came out of that trunk and the finger was gone. And so was the one next to it. One has hidden his name, the other one had shh on it. David felt the need, allegedly, to remove both of those because he had those tattoos, too. Prosecutors wrote in a court brief that they believe the fingers are removed because of what was inked on them. Those two facts belong next to each other. Together, this case stops being abstract. She wrote his name on her skin. She answered his question with it. And prosecutors allege that after she was killed, the name was cut away so it couldn't say what it said. The medical examiner's testimony earlier in the same session explains why her own words carry so much of this case. Dr. Granto, the deputy medical examiner who performed the autopsy, told the court Celeste died from two sharp force wounds to her upper body, one to the chest and one to the abdomen. He testified she'd been dead for at least weeks by the time anyone found her. And the phrase "at least weeks" is carrying a lot in that sentence. It's as far as the science could commit. The distance between at least weeks and the 4+ months, prosecutors allege, is a measure of everything the delay destroyed. Prosecutors allege she was killed on April 23rd of 25. She was found on September 8th. Those dates leave more than 4 months between the day prosecutors say she died and the day anyone looked through an entire Los Angeles summer cooking in a trunk. And Dr. Ho was candid about the cost of that gap. Her body was too degraded to answer every question his office is trained to ask. Decomposition took answers off the table month by month while the car sat on the street and her missing person case sat open in another county. Whoever left her there didn't just hide a body. The delay erased things her family will never get back. But the phone didn't degrade. The thread survived intact. From August 22 to April 23rd, 25, every word time-stamped and preserved. Her body could no longer tell the whole story. Her texts could. This case is going to be based a lot on digital evidence. The January messages are the part of the record that didn't decompose, and prosecutors made sure they were the last thing the judge heard before the evidence closed. Burke's attorneys did their job the same way they've done it since the hearing opened. They pressed the witness on how the evidence was gathered, what was tested, what was never collected, and what conclusions the record can honestly support. In earlier sessions, that approach produced real results from them, including saws from the property that tested negative for blood, chainsaws. If this reaches a trial, that cross-examination was the preview, and it was aggressive. Burke is presumed innocent, and that presumption isn't a technicality. It's the whole system. His lawyers making the state prove every inch of this process working, not the process failing. Legal analysis covering the case, or legal analysts that have been covering this case, have said they expect the probable cause standard to be met precisely because the bar is low, but the ruling belongs to judge. And that judge alone. And it lands and the hearing formally closes. If she orders Burke to stand trial, everything the public heard across those sessions becomes the floor of the prosecution's case, not the ceiling, because a preliminary hearing shows a hand, never a whole one. Whatever she decides, July 24th already did something no ruling can take back. The texts, the images, and the autopsy findings moved out of sealed filings and into open court in front of her parents on the record permanently. The audience that made this man a star can read what the record says, and the record doesn't care about streams. The thread ends on April 23rd of 25. Farrell told the court why. That's the last date in the conversation. It's the day prosecutors allege Burke killed her. 3 years of messages, from a first message sent to an 11-year-old to a final exchange nobody's answered for, and then a silence that's lasted ever since. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was 11 years old when the first message arrived. She was 13 when she told an adult that a baby was something neither of them could handle. And confronted him about it. And answered the question his mother told him to ask. Is it mine? She was 14 when the messages stopped. Every stage of that timeline happened in plain sight of adults who were paid by him to pay attention. and a record built at that hearing exists because none of them did. For one afternoon in a Los Angeles courtroom, her own words did what her body no longer could. They told the story in her voice with his name in the last line. Celeste Rivas Hernandez. Her voice is going to be heard in this trial, even though she's no longer around to voice it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage of this and the many cases we follow for you right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.